Okay, good afternoon. Today we have a group of 3 hours of lesson, all more or less related to the same topic, which is sound recording and playback. This is not exactly acoustics, is what usually in the Anglo-Saxon world is called audio, not acoustics. Acoustics usually in other countries refers to the sound propagation not involving electrical equipment. Instead, in Italy, it's all together. So we have a small part of this course related to this technology, which means mostly microphone and loudspeaker. There are also other equipment in between. We will talk very shortly of the complete recording and reproduction chain. Of course, there are some specialized topics like power amplifier, equalizers, and so on, which are only for electronic engineers and are not covered in this course about acoustics. So we need to come back to the first lesson of this course when we were talking about the origin of sound, and we have seen that the sound is something physical, something occurring in an elastic medium, and this medium for us is air, and in this medium we get fluctuation of both pressure and particle velocity. So human body is mostly sensitive to sound pressure by means of the eardrums, which are pressure transducer, but we have also some other capability of perception, which is more or less related to velocity instead, employing the skin, the chest, the stomach, or employing the two pressure transducers that are the 2 ears, like a velocity transducer, because the pressure difference is proportional to velocity through the Euler equation, which we have already seen. So we must think that as a whole, the human being is both sensitive to pressure and velocity. Pressure does not carry any information about the direction of traveling of sound. Instead, velocity is the physical quantity which informs us of the direction of the sound. If we were not sensible to velocity at all, we would not be able to detect the direction from which the sound is coming, as instead we can quite easily localize the direction of provenance of sound. This means indirectly that we are also sensitive to velocity. So in general, if we want to capture and then later replicate the complete acoustical information, we need to record both pressure and velocity. Recording only pressure does not allow for faithful reproduction of the same sound field in a different space, in a different room. So the transducer which we employ for sampling sound are called microphones, and we have pressure microphones, velocity microphone, or hybrid microphone, which is a mixture of sensitivity to pressure and velocity. A pressure velocity is perfectly omnidirectional, because the pressure quantity does not carry any directional information. A velocity microphone instead is 100% sensitive to just one of the 3 Cartesian components of particle velocity. They are also called unidirectional. The pressure microphone is called omnidirectional, and the velocity microphone is called unidirectional because it only detects one of the 3 components of the particle velocity. Now we see what are hybrid microphones. An hybrid microphone has a directivity polar pattern which varies continuously between omnidirectional, that is 100% pressure. You see the 2 numbers here are just the percentage of pressure, the first, and velocity, the second. So an omnidirectional is 100% pressure, 0% velocity. Then we have a subcardioid, which has a small preference for the frontal sound, and the sound coming from behind is slightly attenuated, and this can be thought to be 75-25. Then we have the cardioid. This is a very famous type of microphone. Very often you go to a shop and buy a cardioid microphone. It is considered the optimal directivity pattern for a handheld microphone. Those microphones which you keep in your hand singing or talking inside it. Those are cardioids. They have a null sensitivity in the direction opposite to the main one. So when you keep it in your hands, it does not sense the noise you make with your hand itself over the microphone, because it is only sensitive towards the pointing direction of the microphone. For having an even narrower main lobe, there is the hypercardioid, but you pay a price for this narrower directivity. In practice, you start getting some real lobes. And a very funny and important thing which happens in the rear lobe is that the signal coming from the reverse direction is also polarity reversed. So if you have a positive pressure peak, like when you clap your hands, you have a positive pressure peak because the pressure goes for a short time above the average pressure of air. This is detected as a positive waveform if it is coming from this direction. If the sound is coming from the positive direction of the hypercardioid microphone, you will see a time signature with a positive pulse, something like that. But if the same signal given by hand clapping comes from the wrong direction, from the rear direction of the microphone, the polarity of the signal will be reversed. So on your waveform editor, you will see a peak going down instead of a peak going up. Of course, the peak will also be smaller because the rear lobe, as you see, has a smaller amplitude, so a smaller gain, a smaller sensitivity to this rear sound. Then we have the extreme case, a perfectly velocity microphone, 0% pressure, which again has this bipolar behavior, so the sound coming from the negative direction comes out to be polarity reversed. Instead, the sound coming from the positive direction is correctly detected with this true acoustical polarity. Okay? You must also understand that this fact of polarity is a bit arbitrary, because our hearing does not have the capability to discriminate a positive pressure peak than a negative pressure peak. This is due to the internal construction of our hearing system, which only senses fluctuation and not the absolute pressure. So for our hearing, these two signals sound exactly the same. They are not the same when you combine the signal of different microphones. In fact, those kind of intermediate directivity microphone can actually be obtained by summing electrically the signal of two microphones. If you have a pure pressure microphone and a pure velocity microphone, and you mix the two signals in an electronic device, adjusting the gain of the pressure microphone versus the velocity microphone, you can change the polarity pattern of your microphone, of your resulting microphone. This is what is called a variable directivity microphone. And this is an excellent example of such a microphone, manufactured by Neumann, one of the most famous makers of microphones worldwide. It's a German company, of course. And this U89I is a variable pattern microphone. You see here there is a sort of ring, and rotating this ring, you see a different figure here showing you the polar pattern which you are selecting. So in practice, this microphone can go from a pure pressure microphone, completely omnidirectional, to a pure velocity microphone, passing through all those intermediate patterns here. Because here inside the grid there are actually two microphones, and combining electrically the signal of the two microphones, you can reconstruct every intermediate polar pattern. Okay? Second point, again regarding polarity. Microphone has three wires, not two. From every microphone, the typical connector which you see is called an XLR connector. And this XLR connector has three pins. One is ground, usually connected with the shield of the cable. And then you have two signal wires. One is red and one is white. And these two signal wire carry the electrical signal of the microphone with reversed polarity. One has the polarity reversed from the other. Swapping the signal swap the complete polarity, but in practice nothing noticeable happens if you only have one microphone, because as said, the absolute polarity is meaningless for our hearing system. What is important is the relative polarity if you use several microphones, and if you solder the wires wrong inside the connectors in some of the microphones, then those microphones will have signal with reversed polarity which cannot be mixed with the signal of the other microphone, because they will cancel each other if the polarity is wrong. What's the reason for carrying the signal on two wires with reversed polarity? Is for better immunity of the electrical signal over the cable to external electromagnetic or radioelectric interference, what is called RFI, radio frequency interference. As we lie today in rooms which are full of electromagnetic fields generated by those lamps above your head, by that beam, by this computer, by the cellular phone in our pockets. If you have a microphone with only one wire, the positive wire, for example, the so-called hot wire, which is the one where positive voltage means positive sound pressure, then this signal is very easily contaminated by RFI. And when you record your signal at the end of the cable, particularly if the cable is very long, you get a lot of electrical noise, interference, and bad things. If instead you carry your signal with two wires with reversed polarity, and your recorder only records the difference between the two signals, as the same noise will be captured by both wires, this common noise, common mode noise is called, will be rejected. And we call it common mode rejection, because this differential electrical recording removes the electrical noise from the cable. This is a very important trick which allows to use microphone with very long cable, 10 meters or even 20 meters. If not, you should be forced to use a very short wire like this one. This is not balanced. Sorry, let's check. It's balanced too. It has three wires. It's very thin, but there are three wires here. Even if it is just 1 meter long, still this is a professional microphone. Perhaps a Sennheiser, I suppose. No, sure. In any case, a good brand. So they use a balanced cable. When a cable has this configuration with one ground or shield plus two polarity reversed wires, this is called a balanced wiring. And with balanced wiring, we have very large immunity to electrical disturbance from other source. So I can bring this over my computer, and you don't hear in the loudspeaker or any kind of electrical signal. If I detach one of the two wires, still my voice goes through, because the signal is carried on also by just one wire. But having lost the differential behavior, you start hearing a lot of background noise. Okay? If you break both the two wires, you don't hear anything, of course, because there is no signal anymore. So from a certain point of view, this redundancy is more robust, because if one of the two connector breaks, you still get signal. It will be more noisy, but you still hear my voice. If you break completely the cable, of course, you lose completely the signal. This is a typical unit which receives the signal from the microphone. It's called a preamplifier. Preamplifier all have a differential input or balanced input. So they can react this common noise which is captured by the cable. This is a two-channel microphone preamplifier. It's called a tube microphone preamplifier. As you see here, there is an old vacuum tube. Still, this is a modern product. What's the reason for this vacuum tube here? Well, in this particular case, it's dummy. It's not real. It's there just for fooling buyers. But there are other more expensive microphone preamplifiers who really use the vacuum tubes. The vacuum tube, instead of a solid state transistor circuit, has many disadvantages and only one advantage. Well, one debatable advantage. That is, vacuum tubes cause even order distortion. So they are not linear, they tend to distort the signal, but the distortion is very rich of second, fourth, sixth order, and so on, even order, and very small distortion at odd orders. Now, psychoacoustically, when we are singing, the even order of the fundamental note being played is usually very pleasant. Why? Odd orders of the fundamental of each note being played or sung is not so pleasant. In practice, adding second order distortion masks the adding even order distortion masks the odd order distortion occurring in other part of the equipment, and overall the sound better. That's the reason for using tube or vacuum tube electronics today. There is no other reason. So you are introducing, by purpose, distortion. If you have a perfectly linear system without any odd-order distortion, there is absolutely no need to introduce even-order distortion. The best thing is to have no distortion, of course. But as it is difficult to build a system completely without any distortion, then it is better to have a lot of even order distortion than having a balance, an equal balance between odd and even order, which is less pleasant. That's the reason for vacuum tube circuit. Then, after the signal has been amplified and from a few millivolts has become a few volts, it's time to convert it to digital. Nowadays, everything is digital. There is no any kind of recording and playback system which is fully analog. Somewhere in the system, there is a digital processing. Also in this wireless microphone, somewhere between this microphone and the loudspeaker, I am quite sure there is some digital trick. Perhaps instead inside this unit there. Because it's cheaper. Today, digital processing is far more cheaper than analog processing. So for making the signal to change between analog and digital, you need a converter. Converters are of two main types, completely different. One are PCM converter. PCM stands for pulse code modulation, and it is widely the most widely employed approach, used for example by the CD, the DAT, the DVD, the computer, and 99% of sound system use PCM. So every sample of the signal has a word, a digital word, with a large number of bits, ranging usually, as we have seen already, between 16 and 24 bits. Instead, the second possible approach is bitstream converter, single bit. In a bitstream converter, the sampling rate is much larger, but you only store one bit for each sampling. Every time you sample the signal, you decide, will be the signal 0 or will be the signal 1? No intermediate choice available. 0 or 1 is binary. The signal is binary. Single bit. The PCM converter, as you see, are often used in normal sound system like those, and the sampling frequency range between 44 kHz, the CD, up to 192 kHz, some special sound card. We have, for example, a Motu Traveler sound card, which I did already carry in this room, which can work up to 192 kHz sampling rate. What happens when you not employ a proper anti-aliasing filter? We did already present this concept during the previous lesson. If, for example, you are working with a sampling rate of 48 kHz and consequently the Nyquist frequency, which is half the sampling rate, is 24 kHz, you record a signal from your microphone which is contaminated by noise at 35 kHz, which is a TV monitor, and this 35 kHz is folded back at 11 kHz below the Nyquist frequency. So in practice, as the Nyquist frequency is 24, the difference between your pure tone and the Nyquist frequency is 11 kHz, you make 24 minus 11, which makes 13 kHz, and at 13 kHz in your spectrum you will see a spurious peak, if this is the spectrum of your signal versus frequency, and the real spectrum was, for example, the spectrum of human voice, something like that. At 13 kHz here, you will instead get a spurious peak coming from aliasing. So your spectrum here will have a strong spike, completely untrue, completely wrong, which is aliasing coming from this 35 kHz peak. So the peak was actually here, Nyquist frequency was perhaps this one, and this is folded back in the audible range, and this is a big trouble, of course. It's a big trouble because make audible something which was not audible and destroy your record. So you need to employ professional, good quality, analog to digital conversion unit equipped with anti-aliasing filter. Those are completely mandatory. For recording a CD quality signal, you need a discretization of 16 bits, which means a dynamic range of 90 decibels, so your anti-aliasing filter must be steep enough to reduce the signal by 90 decibels between the corner frequency, which is usually 20 kHz, and the Nyquist frequency. When instead you, for example, discretize with 20 bits, which is more or less the maximum you can get today, really, it means 114 decibels of dynamic range, and so your anti-aliasing filter must reduce the unwanted high frequency noise by more than 114 dB at the Nyquist frequency. On the market you find converter like this Rosetta 200 from Apogee. The Apogee is one of the best brand in the world of analog to digital converter, probably the best one, the top, that is the top. If you are building a recording studio, you want to specify this kind of professional converter, very expensive but very good quality. This has 24 bits, but it's not true. Even the Rosetta converter, which is the best converter in the world, is actually around 21 effective bits. The other 3 bits are only random noise, no signal there. So in reality, the current technology has just reached 21 bits. We are expecting for 1 or 2 years the next generation of converter, probably again from Apogee, which probably will reach 22 bits of real dynamic range and resolution. So the current limit of 24 is still far to be reached. For many years, converter will operate with 24 bits, of whom probably just 20 or 21 are real. Okay? Then we have that other completely different category, bitstream converter. The idea is oversampling. If you increase the sample rate a lot of time, it compensates for the reduction of the number of bits. If you bring this to the extreme, you can go to such a high frequency of sampling that you can work with only 1 bit. And this is clever, because a 1 bit converter is just a switch, open, close, very easy. So in the end, this is a cheap solution. Making electronics run fast today is not a limit. A sampling rate of 288 MHz is nothing for electric circuit. We have the processor of computer running in the gigahertz range. What is 288 MHz for today electronics technology? Nothing. We could have 40 MHz and it will be nothing yet. But we don't need that actually. Already with 288 MHz and 1 bit resolution, we get an equivalent quality comparable with that of the CD. So in practice, this 1-bit technology is a perfectly feasible way of making analog to digital conversion. It's particularly attractive for very low-cost approach, like mobile phones. The microphone of mobile phones very often operates with this kind of single-bit conversion. It must be very cheap, because the whole phone perhaps can cost less than 100 euros. So you cannot spend 20 or 30 euros for the conversion chip in a cellular phone costing all the whole 100 euros as final price in the shop. Makes no sense. So single bit for this case is the viable solution because it is very cheap. Someone also attempted to propagate the concept that is also a good idea for high quality music recording. And those people were from Sony and Philips. They created a strange type of optical disc, which are not CD, which are not DVD, but they are called Super Audio CD. The Super Audio CD is developed by Sony and Philips and is the only commercial support where you can buy single bit recordings. The quality is not really better than a DVD, but it is slightly better than a CD. It is in between. The second advantage per audio CD is multi-channel. It has 6-channel full bandwidth. So, in a certain sense, it was an improvement over previous technology. The CD is only 2-channel. But nowadays, even the DVD is obsolete. The new standard is Blu-ray. And Blu-ray is again PCM. And on a Blu-ray, you can have up to 16-channel. So, nowadays, Super Audio CD is dead. Also, the DVD is almost dead, not completely. There is still a good market for DVDs, because every one of you has a DVD in his computer and at home, so there is a huge installed base of DVD players, so still the DVD market is good. A lot of recording companies are still recording DVD and selling DVD, and people are buying it. No one is buying any more Super Audio CD. I am not even sure if you did know of the existence of the Super Audio CD. Who did not know, raise your hand. Okay, it's almost unknown. It's the past. It was invented only 10 years ago, but now it's dead. As the HDVD, you know, before the Blu-ray was the successful format for high resolution video, a competing format called HDVD was proposed, and for 1 year more or less the two systems fought each other. Then HDVD did lose the battle and was withdrawn. And now the standard format for high resolution video and films is Blu-ray. The same more or less happened with Super Audio CD versus normal DVD. And DVD did win, of course. Super Audio CD did lose. But from a technological point of view, it was interesting because it was the only format employing single bit recording, bit stream also, of course. So today the standard is to use PCM, apart the cellular phones. So you can buy at a small price this kind of device, which are USB external sound card, capable of 8, 10 or even more channels, both recording and playback, with microphone preamplifiers embedded in the sound card, so you don't need any more a separate unit for making microphone preamplification. You can attach directly the XLR connector of your microphones to these inputs, and with this object, which can cost 250, 300 euros, so it is very cheap, you can make professional quality recording and measurement grade acoustical recording. So this is currently the state of the art. Then there is software. Of course, when the signal is being digitized, the best thing to do is to write software for dealing with it, for making editing, for adding effect, for processing, adding reverberation, equalization, and so on. There are a large number of waveform editors. In this course, we did show you only a couple of them, which are Adobe Audition, this one, and Audacity, which is more or less the same in open source format. But there are many, many other. In recording studios, the most used one is called Pro Tools. The maker is Avid, the same company making the famous video editor for making films. So this Pro Tools waveform editor is currently the most widely used one in the industry. If you go working in a recording studio in a broadcaster like Rai or Mediaset or in a private radio, you will get an audio workstation loaded with Pro Tools, which is not as easy and powerful as Adobe Audition. But it is professional. What means professional? Is foolproof. Sound engineer is often fool for a couple of reasons, because in many countries, including Italy, the sound engineer usually did not study at all. It has probably only elementary school background. So it does not understand anything. It's stupid, it's not trained, and so on. So the software must not be so powerful like Adobe Audition, because it is allowed to make things which will destroy the signal. So a professional audio workstation must stay very strict boundary between what is allowed to do and what is not allowed, and everything you do must be reversible. You should always be able to undo your stupid action. This is very important to be foolproof, because those guys who work with Pro Tools mostly are really stupid guys. That's a fact, and for the software developer you must take into account this fact. Your software must be used not by an engineer in our sense with a proper training, but it will go in the hands of a guy who only made the 5th year in elementary school, and it does not anything of what we were talking before. Okay, that's one problem. Second fact, this software must be expensive. This is another reason, very important. In the professional world, nothing must cost less than 10,000 euros. If cost less than 10,000 euros, it's cheap. So those companies create these incredibly expensive systems with those one quarter of the things you can do with Audacity, which is free, but it's professional. That's very important. Okay. A field in which this is, even to the more extreme situation, is regarding medical technology. When you buy some equipment to be used in an hospital, it must be even more foolproof, because those guys are even more stupid, and it must be even more expensive. So you can have a machine for making echography. The hardware of an echograph machine is less than 2,000 euros, and the machine costs 200,000 euros. That's very important, because in that field everything must be so expensive that no one will misuse of it. No one will buy one at home, toying with it. So there still is the market for paying hundreds of euros for getting an echography, an axial tomography, or so on. The whole sanitary system rotates around this. The whole American sanitary system, because remember, they are controlling the world. So they are talking this thing. And in that field, even more than in broadcasting or in automotive system, the standard is push the price 100 times more than reality, for keeping the control of who is able to do those things and who is not. Making it very expensive create a strong barrier to the dissemination. Luckily enough, instead, in our field, in the last 10 years, the rules were broken. Pro Tools is not anymore the most widely used audio workstation software, because those very cheap or even free software like Audacity are now installed on the computer of everyone. And people are learning to use it. Since when they are young, since they are children, I see my sons, since elementary school, they did use Audacity for recording their voice and making games with their friends. So a new generation of people called native digital people are now used to employ digital audio workstation for their workday life, for doing everything, for leaving a message to your girlfriend. You record it and you add a funny reverb effect over it. So, okay, so now here we are going in a world where everyone will be trained, not trained, is used, because when you start using, when you are a child, for your games with your friends, it's not something which has to be taught you by a teacher. It's something which is natural for everyone. Okay? Now we go to another topic, which is very important for me, because this was, for my past 10 years, my main research topic, which is spatial audio. Most of the audio technology, until 10 years ago, was only mono or stereo. Then surround started to appear in the market as a consequence of the film industry, because the soundtrack of film started to be by default in surround. What means surround? Surround means conceptually more than two loudspeakers, because one loudspeaker is mono, of course. Stereo is usually implemented with two loudspeakers. More than two loudspeakers start to be some sort of surround. Now we will see more in detail the evolution of multi-channel technology and spatial audio information. Stereo was born in the 30s, but it only did take the market around the 60s. So at the time of Beatles, more or less. Okay, so the first massive diffusion of stereo recording and stereo playback system happened at mid of the 60s. Before, all audio was always recorded with one microphone and always played back with just one loudspeaker. And everything was very simple and it worked very well, because mono is easy, it's robust, and the quality can be exceptionally good. When you started employing two microphones and two loudspeakers, a lot of horrible things started to happen. Crosstalk, comb filtering, because when you mix together two signals coming from two different microphones, at a certain frequency the signal is out of phase and cancel out. So stereo is much more difficult. I must say stereo is the most difficult recording technology and playback technology. Surround is easier, actually. When you have five signals, like in normal surround system at your home theater application, it is really rare the case that all the five signals have phase relationship so that they cancel each other and you get a notch in your frequency response. Two of them perhaps will be out of phase and cancel, but the other three will supply some information. So complete cancellation is impossible. Two is the worst number. Definitely stereo is the worst number for audio. The current standard is called usually ITU, International Telecommunication Union, 5.1. We will see what is the .1. The .1 is the low frequency FX channel, which is only used for film, for FX in film like the earthquake, or the explosion, boom. It's not for music, it's not for speech, it's only for film, the .1. However, the standard is called I25.1, and you usually employ five microphones, or in concept, you should use five microphones. In practice, almost never you only use five microphones, you use much more. Then there are other technologies which, until a few years ago, were only in the research lab. The most famous one is ambisonics. And the signal being recorded and played back is called the B-format signal. There are two versions of it, three-dimensional and two-dimensional, and each of them can be just first order, the simple one, or higher orders, second order, third order, fourth order, and so on. Then there is another competing technology, horizontal only, not 3D, which is called wave field synthesis, developed in the Netherlands at the University of Delft. And this has some interesting application because it is the only technique where you can encode the distance of the source from the receiver. And you can also give this effect during playback. All the other methods only encode the direction, but not if the source is close or far. Wave field synthesis instead gives you also the distance from the source. Then there are hybrid methods. We will explain you one, ambisonics. And then there is high-order ambisonics, implemented through a new type of microphone called Eigenmic, 32-channel microphone, and our invention, which is SPS, Spatial PCM Sampling. This has just got 1 year of life now, so it's very recent. The technology is evolving quite rapidly in this field. Let me see how, in most cases, a five-channel DVD is prepared. You have a number of mono microphones recording the single instrument, the voice of the singer, or groups of instruments. Each of these mono tracks enter what is called a surround panel, which is a small piece of software. You see here there is a green marker. You can bring your green marker around, and while you bring your green marker around, the sound is being panned over your 5-channel loudspeaker array. All these 5-channel encodings for each soundtrack are mixed together in a single 5-channel soundtrack, which is stored on the DVD or broadcasted. And this is the normal traditional surround which you find in the soundtrack of the film and in many of your music DVD you have at home, if you have any. Well, the panning can be done in two very different approach. One is pairwise panning, which is the same panning as for stereo, or advanced amplitude panning. Stereo panning is simple. At every angular position from which you want the sound to appear coming, you will feed only two loudspeakers. If, for example, we want to give the impression of a sound coming from this direction, you will feed this loudspeaker and this one. The other will be muted. It's pairwise panning because only two loudspeakers at once are working. So in this picture here, if it was pairwise panning, you only see signal given over this loudspeaker and over this one. Instead, if you look at this picture, this is not the case. Here, the signal is being given simultaneously to all the channels. So this is not pairwise panning. This is advanced panning. The advanced panning law never goes to zero. They always give some signal, positive or negative, at every loudspeaker from every direction of the virtual source. So when you pan your source around, you are always feeding all the array. The signal of all the loudspeakers combine each other vectorially, building the sound field which appears to come from the direction where you are placed your marker with the panner. Okay? Of course, you can also hard pan some sound to some loudspeaker. In this case, you see the voice of this singer is not panned with the panner, which feeds all the loudspeaker. This is hard panned to the center loudspeaker, and this is a common choice when you have a singer with accompanying music. The voice of the singer is hard panned to the center, and no voice of the singer is given to any of the other 4 channels. This is a choice of the sound engineer who mix the soundtrack. Okay? You can look at the panning laws also as polar pattern of virtual microphone. This is a nice concept because you could think that each loudspeaker in the playback system is fed by one corresponding microphone. In this case, all the 5 microphones are coincident. You see they have the same origin, so they are not placed in different points of the room. All the 5 microphones are in the same point of the room, and they are aimed at different direction with different polar pattern, different directivity pattern. So if you were able to build a microphone array with those polar patterns, this will give you exactly the same signal you are getting with your artificial panning on the mixer. 99% of current surround recording are pyrolyzed panel with the pump pot. The pump pot is the knob where you tilt the direction of apparent arrival of sound. Peter Craven panning is better, but only a small number of mixers, like this one, are employing this kind of advanced panning rules. Most of them are just pyrolyzed panning. Let's come back to stereo. Of course, also for stereo, a lot of work is done exactly with the same workflow. Many mono tracks and a panner. In that case, the panner is not 5-channel, it's just 2-channel, but the concept is exactly the same. 99% is done this way. Nevertheless, one technology emerged called ORTF, which sounds better than pyrolyzed panning with the mixer. In ORTF stereo, you record really with two microphones. The two microphones are spaced 180 or perhaps 170 millimeters, which is more or less the distance between our 2 ears. So it is more or less a binaural recording. The two microphones are cardioids, so they are directive microphones, and they are aimed with an aperture angle of 110 degrees. So you have this hornet of microphone. You mount it on a pole, on a tripod, you point it towards the orchestra, and the signal you get from this microphone pair are perfect for being fed to a pair of loudspeakers in the standard stereo configuration, which has an opening of just 60 degrees. So you record with an opening of the microphone much wider than the opening of the loudspeaker, and the distance between the two microphones is not as wide as the distance between the two loudspeakers. We can be 2 meters this distance at your home. I don't know in your room what is the distance between the two loudspeakers, but usually is more than 1 meter, definitely. So the microphones are closer each other, but more widely angled. They feed this loudspeaker system with two loudspeakers at the vertex of an equilateral triangle, and you get a very nice stereo imaging in front of you. This is the best stereo recording technique with two discrete microphones. There is an alternative method which also records 2-channel, which is the binaural technology. This is currently very interesting because a binaural recording is very good to be listened through headphones. So when you prepare a soundtrack for the iPhone, the iPad, or the iPod, these personal media players, which you listen through in-ear headphones, a binaural recording is very effective for this kind of approach. So you place your dummy head in front of the stage, you record just 2 signals. If you listen by headphones, that's perfect. If you listen through loudspeaker, you need to go through a crosstalk cancelling unit. Why you need a crosstalk cancelling unit? Because the signal being played by the left loudspeaker does not only arrive to the left ear of the listener, but it also goes to the right ear of the listener. And you want to cancel this cross path or cross talk, the same for the right ear. So how can you cancel the cross talk? In the past, a physical barrier was mounted between the two loudspeakers running up to your nose. So for listening a binaural recording, you did employ a pair of closely spaced loudspeakers. You see how close they are together. A close pair of loudspeakers is called a stereo dipole, very close each other. The traditional technique was to have a rigid baffle, a plate of wood, for example, between the two loudspeakers. Perhaps the wood was shaped as your face, so you could place your face against the screen and get the right loudspeaker only feeding your right ear and the left loudspeaker only feeding your left ear. Today there is no need anymore of this physical barrier because we can make some sort of active noise cancellation with a matrix of FIR filter which compute the cancellation signal so that you feed on the right loudspeaker not only the right channel signal but also the left channel signal reversed polarity. So this reversed polarity signal will cancel the crosstalk coming from the wrong loudspeaker. This can be very effective. Here you see the formula for computing the filters to be loaded here in the crosstalk cancellation unit. They are FIR filter as usual. So you measure the transfer function of your loudspeaker in front of your dummy head. What you see here is a dummy head microphone system. So you measure this H transfer function. With this formula, you compute the four filter F, this one. If you convolve your original signal with your filter, this is what you get. A perfect direct delta function for the ipsilateral path. Left loudspeaker to left ear, perfect signal transfer. And nothing or almost nothing here, so the left loudspeaker is not giving any signal to the right ear. It has been cancelled. And the same for the right ear. On the right ear, the right loudspeaker signal comes perfect, flat and powerful, and the other ear signal is reduced by 60 decibels or something like that, so it is not audible anymore. This works very well. We have a listening room at Casa della Musica equipped with this binaural stereo dipole system and it is very impressive. It produces sound which appear to come not only between the loudspeaker but in a complete arch which is more or less 180 degree aperture. With a pair of loudspeakers in front of you, you cover completely the frontal hemispace, also with elevation, also down to the floor and up to the ceiling in the frontal hemispace. If you want to cover also the rear hemispace, you need a dual stereo dipole with a second stereo dipole behind you. So with just four loudspeakers, you get a complete three-dimensional spherical coverage. There was the problem that the stereo dipole is not very effective in radiating low frequency. With a subwoofer, you cover also this problem. The only remaining problem is the coloration outside the sweet spot. The system is aligned for a very precise position of the dummy head where you place it for doing the measurement. If you sit there, the sound is perfect. If you move just 20 centimeters on one side, the system goes completely crazy because those filters are aligned for that position of the head. There is some sort of self-tracking. So when you are seated here and you attempt to move, the sound becomes ugly, so you automatically come back to the proper position. But definitely, if there is one friend seated next to you on the other seat, he's not going to hear a good signal. So this technology is for a single listener. It's not group listening. Okay? Here you see an example of a listening room equipped with a dual stereo dipole, one in front and one behind the listener. Then there is the discrete microphone arrays. For creating a 5.1 recording, instead of using the panning, as ORTF was producing a nice signal for two loudspeakers, this kind of discrete microphone array, in theory, should produce nice signal for five loudspeakers. Five microphone, five loudspeaker. every microphone feeds one loudspeaker. It makes sense, it's simple. It's simple, but it's not going to work very well. Even if they attempted many different arrangements of microphone with those funny positioning of the microphone and aiming of directed microphone, nevertheless, all those methods are only partially effective, and they have limited success. I would say no success. There are reasons for such a limited success. This method with these fixed microphone arrays don't give control to the sound engineers. The sound engineers love control. He wants to move slider and bring the sound and pan pot and rotate the sound field and make all those funny tricks. They are not really so useful for the aesthetic of the recording, but he wants control. He's paid for exercising this control, and if you don't give him knobs or sliders, he's not happy. So this is the most important reason for the failure of these recording techniques. Then there are also acoustical reasons. Any one of these geometry is optimized for a certain distance from the stage and from a certain width of the stage. And if you go in a different room, you should rearrange the microphone accordingly. So these layouts are really good only for fixed installation in a given concert hall. But if you go around recording concerts in many venues, it's very difficult to find the optimal positioning of microphone for every different environment. So again, it's not practical. And the last point, current microphones don't provide the directivity pattern which will be optimal for the I25.1 layout. If you remember these panning laws here, those virtual microphones are strongly not symmetric, you see, because here the spacing between the loudspeaker is small, and here the spacing between the loudspeaker is wide. So these two main microphones, the left and right one, the most two important one, are strongly asymmetric. And current commercial microphones only provide symmetric patterns, like this one. So you don't cover with optimal angular resolution your shame. And this is another reason for failure of this discrete microphone system. Then we come to ambisonics. Ambisonics was a technology invented in the 70s, 72, 73, in England, at BBC more or less, and was used by BBC for many years, but only BBC was using that. In the rest of the world, was almost completely unknown. You record the signal with a special microphone called the sound field microphone, and you record a four-channel signal called B-format, and the four channels are labeled W, X, Y, Z. These four-channel signal can be mixed, manipulated, reverberated, rotated, stretched. You can do a lot of things with it. Then at the end, you feed an ambisonics decoder which send the signal to the loudspeaker. There is no correspondence between these four signals and the loudspeaker. Generally speaking, the loudspeaker number is much larger than the four signal which you transmit. You always transmit only four signals, but your loudspeaker array can have 12 loudspeakers, for example. And the decoder will compute the proper feed for every loudspeaker. This is the Soundfield microphone. We own one of these. It's called the Soundfield ST250, the portable version. This black box here converts the signal from the capsules, which are called A-format, to the B-format signal. The B-format signal corresponds to this polar pattern. This is W, and we recognize an omnidirectional microphone, so this is pressure. This is X, and here you recognize the particle velocity microphone sampling the X direction. This is Y, and this, of course, is Z. So you are actually recording pressure and the three Cartesian components of particle velocity, the true physical quantity which you need to record for a complete spatial information of the sound in a point of the space. This is our sound field microphone being tested in the anechoic room, and unfortunately the polar pattern is not as good as the theory predicts. This is a problem of this particular brand of microphones. But nowadays the patents are expired. This is one of the best known examples of why our patent system is completely stupid. This was a brilliant technology, but they patented it. And having patented, impeded to use the technology for 20 years, the duration of the patent. Only after the patent expired, the technology became available and had success. So the patent in this case prevented the inventor to get any money from their invention. And there are many other cases of this. I think the patent system must be completely rewritten from scratch, because as it is now, is not promoting innovation, is not promoting research funds, is not promoting people to invest their time and their money making research for developing new things, making invention. Making the inventor today is a very bad job, because you are going to live poor for your whole life, because the patent system will only steal money from the inventor. It's not protecting the inventor at all. So we need to change it completely. The ambisonic story is an example of this. Now the patents are gone, everyone can build this sound microphone. Here you see several examples of different makers. This is actually our one, the Brahma unit, and I did bring this recorder in the classroom for doing the recording. So at the end you always have four microphones, more or less. The signals are processed digitally in this case, because you record the four signals, the four A-format signals. And a digital conversion to B format is much better and prevents to get all these horrible patterns here. This is not a problem with the microphone itself, it's a problem with the A to B format conversion, which is solved by this, let's call second generation ambisonics microphone. The coding is also very simple. In principle, you have the listener inside a loudspeaker array. You need to feed every loudspeaker with a signal which is a mixture, a combination of the four signals of the bit format. In practice, you just make a weighted sum of the four input signals for computing each speaker feed. The weighting factor, are determined geometrically by the position of each loudspeaker. It is possible to add a small filter here for equalizing perfectly the gain and the phase of each loudspeaker. This is an example of an ambisonics playback system employing just 8 loudspeakers, which is more or less the minimum number for a 3D reproduction with 8. This layout is not isotropic, but it has several advantages, and it is the one which we did employ in our listening room. This here some photo of our previous listening room, not the new one. The new one has 16 loudspeakers. This did have only 8, 4 in the horizontal plane, and 4 on the side, 2 on the floor, and 2 on the ceiling. This is the DSP unit for making the decoding, and this was the fanless silent computer for making the control of the system. This is the software running in the DSP unit, and as you see, this type of software is not programmed by writing code. It's programmed by placing blocks with the mouse on the screen and connecting these blocks with wires. This is called wire programming, and it is the most advanced software development technology for audio processing. A lot of modern software is programmed this way. You don't write any more code like C or Fortran or Basic. That is in the past. Today, sound processing, digital sound processing, is mostly done with this kind of graphical user interface, creating a processing network with blocks and wire. And the blocks can be filters, delay, reverberator, equalizer, and so on. This is the Fayette equalization, which of course flattens the response and match the phase over the loudspeaker. Nowadays, you find free ambisonics decoder. Those are VST plugins. So inside a VST host program, you can load this emigrator plugin, which already makes all the computation for you, for giving you directly the speaker feed. So currently, ambisonics is a free technology for everyone and works very well, much better than other type of surround technology, both for recording and for playback. Three examples of ambisonics room. This was our old one at ISK in Reggio Emilia. This is the University of Bologna, the Arlecchino room, and this is the University of Ferrara. Now we have one much better than all of these three because it has twice the number of loudspeakers, which is at Casa della Musica. This was our old sound, digital sound processing system with a computer, a sound card, the sound web, amplifier for feeding loudspeaker, an 8-channel amplifier for the ambisonic system. These two stereo amplifiers are for the stereo dipoles, and this is the fanless silent computer. A hybrid method is ambiophonics, which combine one stereo dipole plus an ambisonic ring. Here you see our listening room, which has the stereo dipole in front, a normal stereo pair for comparison, and the ambisonic system mounted on the ceiling, on the walls, and so on. Okay, first hour is finished here. Any questions? Okay, stop.